And welcome to City of Dreams. I'm Dylan Collins with Malt and special guest. What's your name on VH?
I don't have a name.
Emma Lou?
Yeah, sure.
We're calling her Emma Lou. She did the awesome City of Dreams logo.
Oh, yeah.
The delicious rapid logo. Skills. Yes. Tonight we have monologues from the 50s, Sunset Boulevard, Streetcar Named Desire, High Noon, From Here to Eternity, On the Waterfront, The 7-Year Age, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Incredible Shrinking Man, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and Some Like It Hot. And we're going to critique them and judge them, and it'll be epic and awesome, as Zane would say.
Woo. I've had to remake posters from some of these.
See, that's why you're qualified to judge this round.
Yeah, clearly.
So tonight will be more like winner take all, because if two of us like one and only one of us likes another one, the one that likes that has two people liking it will win all of the points. Ooh. In the off chance that we each like one and there's three, then we'll split them into thirds. But I think that probably won't happen. But who knows? Anything can happen on City of Dreams, you guys. Anything.
I am really excited to hear these.
Me too.
I'm extra excited.
I'm trying to track down Blackjack's file right now to see what movie he's doing. Okay, I know what movie he's doing now. I'm going to update the list.
Awesome.
Okay.
So I'm sad because apparently there's drops.
Aww.
I did not receive anything from Tregatry, and I did not receive anything from Saigo, so they have been eliminated from the show. What a bunch of dicks.
I know, right?
I know.
And I actually recognize those names.
Do you recognize them as infamous?
Damn it!
Because Tregatry and Saigo are both pretty infamous for dropping shows.
What?
They're both infamous for dropping shows. Probably wouldn't have gotten any points for their team anyway. It's no big loss. That's how I feel.
Oh.
You have to give droppers crap or else they will just continue to drop. They have to learn, Emily. They have to learn.
Okay, so shame on you.
Yes.
Shame
them.
I'm tisking my finger or something like that.
Get the shame
you
stick.
You have malts.
There'll be no hot chocolate.
Despising. No, I don't despise you, but I'm disappointed. You have Mama Malt's disappointment.
We did.
You should see her disappointed face.
We did think Blackjack so dropped, but Reed had something he had uploaded to Box.net earlier in the week, so we're good with Blackjack. We have a Blackjack, ladies and gentlemen. We have a Blackjack. Let me just go to my folder so we can start. Who wants to set up Sunset Boulevard?
Sunset Boulevard.
You're not John Barrowman.
Shut up.
Screenwriters, or 1950 screenwriters Charles Brackett, Billy Wilder, D.M. Marshman Jr., delusional descent down the stairs, silent film star Norma Desmond presented a demented, delusional speech as she descended her staircase to be arrested at the film.
I will set it up. I just need to.
I've already set it up, Malt.
You were lagging so badly that I couldn't hear
this
you.
This is going to be a clusterfuck.
I can hear even less than she can hear you.
This is horrible.
I can hear even less than she can hear you.
This is horrible, you guys.
This is the worst.
Oh, man. It's worth 4 points. Temporary Butterflies on it. We're going to listen to Temporary Butterfly now.
I can't go over the seat. I'm too happy. Mr. DeMille, do you mind if I say a few words? Thank you. I just want to tell you all how happy I am to be back in the studio making a picture again. You don't know how much I've missed all of you. And I promise you, I'll never desert you again, because after Salome we'll make another picture. And another picture. You see, this is my life. It always will be. There's nothing else. Just us. The cameras. And those wonderful people out there in the dark. All right, Mr. Mill. I'm ready for my close-up.
That was Temp on Sunset Boulevard, you guys.
Ooh.
I know. She's trying to get 4 points. If nobody else... Oh, shit. If nobody else is on the monologue, Team Oscar will get 4 points. Automatically. It's exciting.
Automatically. Instantaneously.
Yes. Splendiferous. Is anybody else on that monologue? Malt?
There is no one else on this monologue.
4 points to Team Oscar. They are going to catch up. By the way, not including this 4 points you just got, Team Heaven Sucks is at 13, Team Bollywood 18, Team Oscar 25.5, and Team Utterly Absurd 55.5. Team Oscar lost Trick-or-Treat this week, and Team Bollywood lost Saigo. But like I said, that they don't typically get points for their team, so it's not really a big loss. Okay, 1951, A Streetcar Named Desire, 9 points. Who wants to set it up?
I can totally set it up.
Is this Malt talking or Emily? I can't tell the difference.
This is Malt. Okay. You can't tell.
Do you know how to pronounce
her
the last name?
Her voice is much higher than mine.
Do you know how to pronounce the last name of Vivian Leigh's character?
All right.
Dubois.
Yes.
Dubois.
It's Dubois.
Blanche Dubois.
Set it up, Malt.
All right. Blanche Dubois also gave a famous Beauty is Transitory speech to Stanley Kowalski, who is played by Marlon Brando, when she thought that her millionaire admirer, Huntley, would respect her, desire her for her companionship, and not invade her privacy. She imagined that he wanted a cultured woman, such as herself, with inner beauty. In her deluded fantasy life, she convinced herself that she was not getting older, but only improving with age, and would have the pick of her suitors.
Streetcar Named Desire, 1951, written by Tennessee Williams and Oscar Saul. Who's up first on this monologue?
Up first is... Millie.
I can read things, too.
Nice.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Let's listen to Mele.
It won't be the sort of thing you have in mind. This man is a gentleman. He respects me. What he wants is my companionship. Having great wealth sometimes makes people lonely, and a cultivated woman, a woman of breeding and intelligence, can enrich a man's life immeasurably. I have those things to offer. Time doesn't take them away. Physical beauty is passing. A transitory possession. But beauty of the mind, richness of the spirit, tenderness of the heart. I have all those things. And they aren't taken away. They grow. Increase with the years. And it's strange that I should be called a destitute woman when I have all these treasures locked in my heart. I think of myself as a very, very rich woman. But I've been foolish, casting my pearls before, yes, swine. And I'm thinking not only of you, but of your friend, Mr. Mitchell. He came here tonight, he did, coming in his work clothes to repeat slander, vicious stories he'd gotten from you. I gave him his walking papers. But then he returned. He returned with a box of roses to beg my forgiveness. He implored my forgiveness. But some things are not forgivable. Deliberate cruelty is not forgivable. It is the one unforgivable thing, in my opinion, and the one thing of which I have never, never been guilty. So I said to him, thank you. But it was foolish to think that we could ever adapt ourselves to each other. Our ways of life are too different. Our backgrounds are incompatible. So farewell, my friend, and let there be no hard feelings.
That was Melly.
Melly. I'm going to do that like every time.
Monologue.
It's just fun to do.
It is fun to do. Am I still lagging?
No, you're not lagging, actually.
Yay. That monologue's worth 9 points, so if nobody else is on it, Melly will get 9 points for Team Oscar. But is somebody else on it, Emily?
I get to say it.
Yes, although yes. I didn't type the name right, so
yes,
you might not.
Yes, there is.
Who is it?
It is Rochellular.
It is Rochellular. It's Rochellular. Let's listen to Rochellular.
Woo!
It won't be the sort of thing you have in mind. This man is a gentleman. He respects me. What he wants is my companionship. Having great wealth sometimes makes people lonely. A cultivated woman, a woman of breeding and intelligence, can enrich a man's life immeasurably. I have those things to offer, and time doesn't take them away. Physical beauty is passing, a transitory possession, but beauty of the mind, richness of the spirit, tenderness of the heart, I have all those things. They aren't taken away, but grow, increase with the years. Oh, strange that I should be called a destitute woman when I have all these treasures locked in my heart. I think of myself as a very, very rich woman. But I have been foolish, casting my pearls before, yes, swine. And I'm thinking not only of you, but of your friend, Mr. Mitchell. He came here tonight, he did, coming in his work clothes to repeat slander, vicious stories he'd gotten from you. I gave him his walking papers, but then he returned. He returned with a box of roses to beg my forgiveness. He implored my forgiveness. Oh, but some things are not forgivable. Deliberate cruelty is not forgivable. It is the one unforgivable thing, in my opinion, and the one thing of which I have never, never been guilty. So I said to him, thank you. But it was foolish to think that we could ever adapt ourselves to each other. Our ways of life are too different. Our backgrounds are incompatible. So farewell, my friend, and let there be no hard feelings.
That was Rochellular.
Whoop.
Malt, let's start with you on both of these.
All right. So both of them, like, one after the other, or are we doing one person first again?
Let's do one person first.
All right. Starting with Melly, then?
Yeah.
All right. Melly, I think that it was really, like, and I know we're not supposed to comment on, like, mic things, but I don't even know if it was a mic thing. It's just you were very, very quiet. And, like, I had to turn my volume up really high to hear it at all. And I feel like it was a bit monotonous, almost, sort of one level. And there was no growth in it, which was a bit disappointing, because I think this is probably one of the worst I've heard from you, and that's... And I hate saying it, but, yeah.
What a dick.
No, I'm such a bitch.
What did you think, Emily?
My first impression was that it reminded me of Bioshock, which is a really good thing, because Bioshock's, like, my favorite game.
Nice.
And it's weird, because I don't actually know too much about the movie it's from, but it reminded me of the Splicers, so that's kind of cool. I think that's... This is artist comments.
Yes.
I don't know things.
This is Shia LaBeouf comments.
Yes, this is actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf commenting on your voices.
Yeah. I liked yours a lot, Melly. This is a weird thing to critique on. It's something Zelena would say, but there were a lot of weird mouth things going on, like saliva sounds, and that's like a weird thing to say, but it was a lot. Like it was really noticeable for like the first half of the monologue, and so I kept like it kept pulling me out of the monologue because I was like, why is there so much saliva? But I really liked the monologue and I liked your read on it a lot overall. But I think maybe in the future, if you have a lot of saliva or something going on, maybe redo it. What did you think of Rochelle, Emily?
It sounded like a completely different monologue, which is really cool because, like, I don't know, it's different interpretation on it, and it was really good, like, emotion and stuff. It was awesome.
Yeah, one of the things I like about the show is that people do the same monologue different ways. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I say awesome too much, so be wary, everyone.
She thinks things are awesome.
Everything is awesome.
When you think of things that are, like, awesome, like, the actual word awesome... Wouldn't you describe that as, like, I don't know, like a planet exploding? Isn't that, like, the definition of awesome?
Yes, the definition of awesome is technically supposed to be something large and spectacular that strikes you with awe.
So
Emily's nickname is True Fact.
It's Shell's true.
Monologue was equal to you to a planet exploding.
A nebula,
nice.
In fact.
What did you think, Mom?
I liked the tone of your voice, and, like, that's probably because I just... really love raspy tones, and it was a little raspy at times, and like that is a good thing, so I'm putting that out there. Really love that kind of tone. I did like the emotion, but I still think that there wasn't enough growth in it. And I think that they both seemed a little rushed at times.
I don't think, like, not to, I don't, I said at the beginning of the series that we weren't kind of, like, critiquing anybody super hardcore, but I feel like if this was somebody like Jinxers or something, I would say this. So just to be fair, like, I don't think either of these were all that spectacular. Like, they were both kind of dry and boring a little bit, and I don't think they did much with their monologues. For me, I'll say who I thought won, and then you two can say who you thought won.
All right.
For me, what it came down to was that Melly's took a very real feeling turn towards the end, so I went with Melly. Who did you go with, Malt?
I went with Rochelleular because there was a little bit more emotion in certain parts that stuck out to me.
If whoever Malt, I mean, I'm sorry, whoever Emily picks will get the points for their team. Emily, who did you pick?
Oh, dear Lord. Melly
gets 9 points for Team Oscar. Team Oscar right now is sweeping. They've won both of their monologues so far.
Oh, snaps.
I know. It's pretty epic. Next up.
Like a nebula.
Yeah, I do the same thing, I guess. Next up, 1952 High Noon. It's worth 10 points. This is a big monologue.
Ooh.
Yeah. And let me just say what's happening with this. Actually, no, I won't. We'll keep it a secret. Okay. High Noon, 1952. Screenwriter Carl Foreman, All for Nothing, a 10-star. In the western town of Hadleyville, beleaguered Marshal Will Kane went to the townspeople at the local church to gain support to help him defend the town against vengeful gunslingers about to arrive. Mayor Jonas Henderson summed up the debate by first complimenting Kane. He then stated that Frank Miller was the town's concern and problem. A violent shootout would also create a bad image for Hadleyville up north, especially for financial growth and investment support from the northern business interests. But then he concluded by advising Kane to flee town for good, for the good of the local economy. I read that so well.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. 10-point monologue. Who's up first, Malt?
Up first?
Or it could be the only one up.
Monologue. Yep. Up first, or perhaps the only one claiming this 10 points,
mm-hmm.
is Read to Me.
Oh, yeah.
What this town owes Will Kane here, it can never repay with money. And don't ever forget it. He's the best marshal we ever had. Maybe the best marshal we'll ever had. But if Miller comes back here today, it's our problem, not his. It's our problem. Because this is our town. We made it with our own hands out of nothing. And if we want to keep it decent, keep it growing, we've got to think mighty clear here today. And we've got to have the courage to do what we think is right, no matter how hard it is. All right. There's going to be fighting when Kane and Miller meet, and somebody's going to get hurt. That's for sure. Now, people up north are thinking about this town, thinking mighty hard, thinking about sending money down here to put up stores and to build factories. It'll mean a lot to this town, an awful lot. But if they're going to read about shooting and killing in the streets, what are they going to think then? I'll tell you. They're going to think this is another wide-open town and everything we worked for will be wiped out. In one day, this town will be set back 5 years. And I don't think we can let that happen. Mind you, you all know how I feel about this man. He's a mighty brave man, a good man. He didn't have to come back here today. And for his sake and the sake of this town, I really wish he hadn't. Because if he's not here when Miller comes, my hunch is there won't be any trouble. Not one bit. Tomorrow, we'll have a new marshal. And if we can all agree here to offer him our services, I think we can handle anything that comes along. And to me, that makes sense. To me, that's the only way out of this. Will, I think you'd better go while there's still time. It's better for you, and it's better for us.
That was Reed. He will get 10 points for Team Utterly Absurdist if no one else is on the monologue. Malt, is anybody else on the monologue?
Let me see. There is...
Russ.
Russ is not up next, you idiot. Reed's the only one on the monologue. 10 points to Utterly Absurdist. 10 points minus from Slytherin Chandler. They can't hear your end of the conversation. I'm recording straight to Audacity. Because I was the one that messed up and said Russ was on there, and I just wanted to make Chandler look bad. Yeah. 1953 From Here to Eternity is up next. I'm pretty sure... I'm just going to go ahead and say that Blackjack, I think, is the only one on this monologue. But let me just double check, since apparently I can't read tonight. Do-do-do-do. I will send you Blackjacks. Nobody else is on this monologue, From Here to Eternity. So let me just set it up really quickly so we can... Okay. Da-da-da-da-da! Decision to Put Aside Boxing. From Here to Eternity, 1953 writer Daniel Taradesh. Private Robert Prue Pruitt explained his decision to never box again. Blackjack, it's you. This monologue is worth 3 points for the Utterly Absurdist. So, 3 points to you guys. All right, let's listen.
Some of the guys are put me over the jumps because I don't want to fight. Yeah, I'm the boxing team. I don't want to box. I don't even want to think about it. See, I used to fight middleweight, and I was pretty good. And they know it. That's why. I used to work out with this guy, Dixie Wells. He was a really good friend of mine. Loved to box. People on the outside had their eye on him. He was gonna get out of the army and go right up to the top. You know, well, one afternoon, he and I were sparring around in the gym, you know, kind of friendly-like, and he must have been set pretty flat on his feet, because I caught him with no more than ordinary right cross, and he didn't get up. No, he didn't move. He was in a coma for a week, and finally, he did pull out of it, only... The thing was that he was blind. Well, I went to see him at the hospital a couple times, and finally I just couldn't go back. The last time he and I started talking about fighting, and he started to cry. And seeing tears coming out of those eyes that couldn't see anything.
That was Blackjack. Only one on the monologue. He got 3 points, you guys.
Swag.
This is one of, but like, we don't usually critique just a single monologue, but this is one of my favorite monologues of the whole series so far.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got to hear it.
I'm glad you did, too. Did you love it?
I did. I really loved it.
It was, like, super, like, conversational and real sounding. I liked it a lot.
I'm a robot, and I almost had tears.
See? See? Who am I talking to? Emily or Mullen?
That's Emily.
I'm the robot.
Okay. Emily is the deep-voiced robot. You're the the high-pitched zombie.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay. What's up?
And now that we've got that settled... We're moving on to 1954 on the waterfront. It's 8-point monologue. Let's just say from now on who's on the monologue ahead of time. I'm tired of this secretive shit.
But it adds drama.
I don't think it does. I don't think it does.
I think it does.
Whenever
it works.
Whenever we're in a listen, like somebody will be like, "Oh, you did that monologue too, tee," and ruin the drama anyway.
Oh, that's depressing.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Everyone who does that is jerks.
Axelden's done it several times. Just saying.
Oh my god.
I will call people out.
Oh.
From Here to Eternity, we did that one. On the Waterfront, 1954, Bud Schulberg wrote it. It's I Could Have Been a Contender speech.
I Could Have Been a Contender?
Yeah, do you want to read the setup? Let's let Emily read it.
Oh no, no, I can't read anything. Okay. I stutter and
Chandler,
make noises.
Chandler, would you like to read it?
Sure.
All right. Sorry I said your real name. I don't know why I did that. It's weird, but go ahead.
Disappointed longshoreman Terry Malloy, played by Marlon Brando, spoke to his mobster brother Charlie, played by Rob Steiger, in the backseat of a taxicab. Charlie told Terry that he had heard a rumor that Terry might testify in court. The grapevine says that you got a subpoena. What?
Subpoena.
Okay, that word. Charlie advised him to keep his mouth shut and not testify. Be a cheese eater.
You have to say it like a New Yorker.
Be a cheese eater.
Nice.
About what he knew about the corrupt union bosses or else. Terry was offered an easy loft job, a boss load a slot on the new pier, worth up to $400 a week, promising, you don't do anything and you don't say anything. But Terry was uncertain and agitated about the conditions, especially when his brother threatened there would be serious consequences and even held a gun on him.
Oh, no.
Terry yes. faced up to the fact that he had made nothing of his life. He blamed his brother instead of his manager for his failings. Terry was reminded of how he was given a one-way ticket to Palookaville in his boxing days when he knew he had a winner inside himself, but was told to lose in fixed fights. He realized that his brother betrayed him and sold him out to Palookaville, a reference to a palooka, an inferior or average boxer, for a quick profit, with these words expressing his terrible loss.
You don't know how excited I am for this.
Are you excited?
This is like, I'm really excited.
Let me just say something about this monologue before we start. I did a quick skim of the monologues when I was giving points. This probably isn't an 8-point monologue. The introduction was so long, I assumed the monologue was longer. But it's a famous monologue, so it's worth it. Like L'Oreal.
Yeah.
We have three people on this monologue. We have Heaven Incarnate for Team Heaven Sucks, Jinxers for Team Oscar, and Axelden for Team Bollywood. So, I think we'll just play them all three right after each other. We won't even bother to come in between them. That'll make it even better.
All right.
Yeah, so we're going to hear Heaven first, then Jinxers, then Axel. I'll make a weird noise between the monologues so you know when the next one starts.
Okay.
Okay. Russ is also on this one too. Sorry, Russ. I got confused. But there's four people on the monologue. We'll start that in part two. We'll come back in part two and we'll play them all four back to back. So first, you will hear... it's weird recording in Audacity. First, yes, thank you, Heaven. Then Jinxers, then Axelden, and then Mr. Russell Gold. BRB lols.